When troubles come and my heart burdened be, then I am still and wait here in the silence until you come and sit a while with me. You raise me up so I can stand on mountains. You raise me up to walk on stormy seas. I am strong when I am on your shoulders. You raise me up to more than I can be.
ప్రేమ స్వరూపురాలా,
ఎంబాడిమెంట్స్ ఆఫ్ లవ్.
ప్రేమ ప్రతి ఒక్కరికి అది బద్ధమై శాశ్వతంగా నిలిచినటువంటిది.
లవ్ ఇస్ సో సేఫ్, సో స్టడీ అండ్ పర్మనెంట్.
ప్రేమ ఎవరిని బాధించదు.
లవ్ విల్ నెవర్ హర్ట్ ఎనీబడి.
కనుక ప్రేమ అనేటువంటిది ఎప్పుడు నువ్వు హెల్ప్ చేసేటువంటిది.
లవ్ ఇస్ ఆల్వేస్ హెల్ప్ఫుల్.
హెల్ప్ ఎవర్ హర్ట్ ఎవర్.
Help ever, hurt never.
దీనికి హెల్ప్ మనం చేస్తూ రావాలి.
We should go on helping.
దీనికి మించినటువంటి యొక్క దాన ధర్మములు మరొకటి లేవు.
There cannot be greater acts of charity beyond this.
You raise me up so I can stand on mountains. You raise me up to walk on stormy seas.
Most humble pranams at the divine lotus feet of our very dear Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba, who lives in us all, who is present here today as he has always been, and who raises us up to be more than we can ever be in all our lives. Sai Ram. Sai Ram, everybody. A very happy Guru Purnima to all of you. That, of course, was You Raise Me Up, sung by Josh Groban, words by Brendan Graham. It was composed in 2002, and it's indicative of what Swami has contributed in some way or fashion to all of our lives here today. When I thought about how do I speak about Swami, the universal teacher, the thought that came to me primarily was Swami is universal because his message is timeless. And his message is rooted in only one thing, universality. His message is applicable at all times, all places, all situations. How much we choose to apply it is, of course, in our hands. But there is never a situation in our life where we can never say, oh, Swami didn't tell me how to do that. Because there is never a situation. It is universal. He has given us instructions for almost every aspect of life. In the 2007 World Youth Conference, he gave us instructions about cheese and yogurt. So he's got it covered. Swami has everything covered. That song is also inspirational because it is in resonance with what Swami says about a teacher. So the lyrics that kind of come over and over again in the chorus, you raise me up so I can stand on mountains. You raise me up to walk on stormy seas. I am strong when I am on your shoulders. You raise me up to more than I can be. There is no life without its hunger, and each restless heart beats so imperfectly. But when you come and I'm filled with wonder, sometimes I think I glimpse eternity. How many of us here have seen Swami in his physical form? It's a large percent of the audience, almost all of the audience. So we know what it means to glimpse into eternity. We know what it means to sit at Kulwant Hall or Vrindavan or wherever we went, craning our necks, trying to avoid conversation, indulging every once in a while because it's so hard to avoid conversation, but still trying to stay focused, keeping our eyes focused on that door when Swami comes through, Swami walks through. And there's this one song that captures it so well, that glimpse into eternity. So that's the song that I think of always when I think of Swami, and that is, a crown of hair, an orange robe, loving eyes, a heart of gold. He floats to us across the sand. Sacred ash pours from his hand. Millions call him Living Lord. The Living Lord is here. Millions wait with tearful eyes. Tearful eyes with joy inside. A million hearts with deep devotion filled with the love of the Lord. So that's our first trip to Prashanti, our first trip when we glimpse into eternity. When we see what Swami is there and what potential he can bring up in our very own selves. Swami talks about our transformation constantly. And when we see that, Swami also talks about a guru in that context. And as much as we are so attached to that lovely form, to that lovely form that resided in Prashanti Nilayam, we are certainly a lot attached to the lovely form that resides in our hearts. That's one of the advantages of living, I think, in the United States. To stay constantly in touch with Swami, we keep him in our hearts. Because we can't rush to Prashanti Nilayam on every woman fancy. Most of us here are on a 3-week vacation limit, right? And so that's it, 3 weeks. We have to figure our lives around those 3 weeks. So Swami is in our hearts. And it is very apt to think about this on Guru Purnima Day, because Swami, when he talks about a guru, when he defines a guru, mentions that one of the aspects of the guru is the formlessness aspect. So to quote Swami, The Guru is called so because the letter Gu signifies Gunatita, one who has transcended the three gunas, the qualities of ignorance, passion, and virtue. And the letter Ru signifies one who is Rupavarjita, one who has grasped the formless aspect of Godhead. The Guru destroys the illusion and sheds light. His presence is cool and comforting. That is why this day, a full moon day, is allotted for paying due honor to the Guru. Moreover, the moon is the presiding deity of the mind, and full moon is the day on which the mind has become fully beneficent. Of course, you must know what you've lost so that you may start on the search to recover it. We'll talk a little bit about what we've lost later. But this aspect of, you know, the first event, first big celebration in Prashanti Nilayam after Swami has left his physical form is Guru Purnima. And it is so interesting that Swami defines the Guru and in all aspects himself as someone who has transcended the form. That puts us in context right away. And then Swami talks about the moon. You know, when we do the aarti to Swami, we sing calm and tranquil like the moon, shining with divine inner light. So it's so true. That form that's imprinted on our in our memories, in our hearts, and what it means to us, gives us the sense of dispelling illusion, dispelling darkness, shining with divine inner light. And it gives us the opportunity to shine with His divine inner light that He's placed in all of us. The moon also reminds me. So in 2002, I was in India. I had hoped to participate in the Christmas choir, the Christmas choir that's presented in front of Swami every year. And in 2002, I was there, but I had to leave on the 23rd. So what I decided to do was, at least let me participate in the rehearsals, in the practice. Let me feel the oneness with all our wonderful Sai family, almost 700 of us, who sit in the same room and sing His praise. And so we did that. For days, we would rehearse for 5 hours a day, 2.5 hours in the morning, 2.5 hours in the evening. We were rehearsing in the Purnachandra at that point. Swami would walk behind the Purnachandra after the darshan from Kulwant Hall behind the Purnachandra to go to His residence. And this full moon, this beaming full moon always reminds me. On two occasions, when the aarti was being sung, so Swami had signaled the aarti, and we couldn't see Swami because we were in the Purnachandra, but we would hear the speakers. So once the aarti started there, we'd start our own aarti, because we'd be like, we need to sing aarti as well. So we try to keep in sync as much as possible, but you know, there were 1,000 of us, so even if we didn't keep in sync, we wouldn't know, because we are our own little bubble there. 1,000 people, 1,000 voices singing aarti. So on one occasion, we were singing the aarti, and we look up, and the back curtains of the Purnachandra parted, and Swami's head popped out. Swami's head popped out. He turned and he gazed at the entire, all of us practicing. And then we all saw him. And you know, it's that moment when we go, is that Swami? Did we really see him? Is that really Swami? You know, we're like looking at each other through the corner of our eyes. But He's there. We see Him. And then we're wondering, oh, what's going to happen next? And sure enough, in Swami's inimitable style, the full moon appeared and the full moon disappeared. Shut the curtains and went to His residence. So it's our little treat, you know. It's something we will always remember, that when we sang the aarti, Swami actually decided that He would peek out, show His full moon radiance to us for just about 10 seconds, glance the room, and walk away. But it's so memorable, that moon-like face that's able to dispel our darkness. So, you know, when we think about that in the context of a guru, Swami says, that's why the guru is celebrated on this full moon day, on the Purnima day. And then Swami says, you know, this is who a guru is, but He talks about an ideal guru. So Swami says, let's move on. Let's talk about an ideal guru. Swami says in the Bhagavad Gita, the disciple is the highest among men. The guru is the supreme person. The disciple is a high soul. The guru is the supreme soul. The disciple is an ideal person. The guru is an incarnation of the divine. The disciple is an actor. The guru is the director of the play. The disciple is a wielder of the bow. The guru is the lord of yoga. It is this type of guru-disciple relationship which illustrates the ideal combination. The true guru is one who has no ego or selfishness and who can raise the disciple to his own level. You raise me up to more than I can ever be. That is our Swami. Through his example, single-handedly, and through this very paragraph, he said, the greatest of guru requires the greatest of disciples. So step up, people. That's what Swami is telling us. This is a conversation that says, you know, I am the supreme person. I am the supreme soul. I am an incarnation of the divine. So you should be the highest among men. You should be a high soul. You should be an ideal person. And you should be an actor. The wielder of the bow, of course, is in the context of the Gita. So I wouldn't actually, you know, go buy our crossbow set yet. But what Swami says is his expectation of his disciples and his identity as, you know, I am the Lord of the universe. I know this. I know you are capable of realizing this. But for that, here are some of the things you can do to be an ideal disciple. Swami does raise the disciple to his own level by being a constant example. For the 85 years he was on the planet, he was nothing but exemplary in the messages he gave us and expected us to follow. You know, an example. It's just one little example. When we went to Prashanthi Nilayam, one of the aspects that Swami talks about here, large-heartedness, the signs of a true guru are large-heartedness. When the USA, our pilgrimage, went to Prashanthi Nilayam, Swami, who had been coming for darshan maybe once a day or every other day sometimes, started coming to darshan twice a day. Twice a day with unfailing regularity. And there were so many people in the ashram who said, don't go. They came up to several USA scarves and they said, don't go. Swami's coming out twice a day. Don't go. Stay. You're obviously having a good effect on him. He's coming out and seeing you. But, you know, the truth is, it's his large-heartedness. He knew this was our first ever national pilgrimage. He knew the impact it would have by sharing his physical form. He knew the opportunity would not come again. We didn't know that. He knew it. So he decided to be so large-hearted and give and give and give, so much so that after 7 or 8 days of Swami coming morning and evening, if he didn't come one morning, after, you know, the previous day when we were there, there were other groups doing presentations. The East Godavari district did, the Rajasthan district did. And, you know, he would be out till 8 p.m. And we would expect him to be large-hearted and come for darshan the next morning. And we would be so disappointed if he didn't come because we got used to it. We were spoiled, right? But the fact is, we were spoiled due to his large-heartedness, his amazing capacity to give and give and give and give. Another one Swami says is, you know, absence of envy, equal-mindedness in his conduct towards everyone, absolute selflessness and purity in living and freedom from acquisitiveness. The giving aspect again. Swami is such a giver. I remember when I made my first trip to Prashanthi Nilayam, I think in 90, Swami was still floating to us across the, well, it wasn't sand. He was floating to us across the concrete. And as he was floating, you were allowed to, you know, you were allowed to take, it was before the time of cell phones, thankfully. So you were allowed to take chocolates to Swami. And Swami would very often touch the chocolates, sometimes pick it up and he'd give a little flur. He'll just twirl his hand a little bit and there'll be like a rain of chocolates on people. And of course that'll land on people's laps and that would make their day, their year, their life, you know, they were hooked, they were caught in Swami's love. And I was 13 and I would think at that time, wow, Swami, the only thing that he keeps are the letters, are our worries, are our worldly concerns. That's the only thing he keeps. Everything else he gives. You can never see him taking taking anything, everything else he gives, right? Chocolates. There'd be garlands once in a while, and he'd throw the garland back. And he would just, when he walks into that room, he would sit in the mandir then for bhajans. And when he walks into that room, he'd have his letters. And I'd go, wow, you give everything back to us, and all you have are our worries. How selfless is that? Freedom from acquisitiveness. He doesn't want anything. He is not wanting for anything, right? And of course, one of the chocolates that fell was on my sister's lap the first time we ever went. And that chocolate changed her life. That chocolate literally changed her life. My sister really wanted to come to the United States at that point. And in 1990, the path to come here for a master's degree was not as, you know, well laid out as it is today. Now, back in India, everybody knows you do this, you give that test, you go to your visa at this point, you avoid this day because that person won't give you a visa on that day. You know, you have all these little tips and tricks, best known methods. Back in the day, it was still very, it was still very gray. And this was the last week of August, and her semester here was scheduled to begin on September 9th. She didn't have an admission. She didn't have any of her papers. She didn't have financial, you know, the financial documents that you take. We were in Parthi. A chocolate landed on her lap. We drove back to Madras, and the drive itself is a beautiful, beautiful Swami miracle. But we drove back to Madras, and as we were driving into the gate of our house, we opened the gate and we were driving the car in and parking, the phone was ringing inside. So we are hustling and bustling out of the car. This was also back in the day when answering machines hadn't made their appearance. So when the phone rang, you ran to it. You got it, right? So the phone is running and we're just in a frenzy. We get there and it's my uncle calling from Chicago saying, my sister has been accepted into a college and she needs to be here in a week. And so the chocolate, so my sister held up the chocolate and she said, you know what? This chocolate has changed my life. I know I'm going to be there in a week. And she was here in a week. She did, you know, everything. The bank documents, the visa preparation, the acceptance of application, buying the tickets, going for the visa, getting the visa, showing up at the airport, leaving. Everything was done in 1 week. The next Sunday, she was in the United States. And Swami had a contingency plan for her. As we were working through all of this, a second admission appeared. Wednesday. So this was Sunday. Wednesday, a second admission appeared. And we just went, well, when it rains, it pours. And we put that admission away. And, you know, she said, okay, now I have one more. Thank you, Swami. She came here, and the first admission that she had, that college went on strike. And the second college started 2 weeks later. So she went all the way to Connecticut, and she couldn't join the University of Bridgeport. So she came back to the Midwest and went to the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. So that's where my sister graduated from. So yes, chocolates and Swami's absolute selflessness and freedom from keeping anything and giving it back to us is life-changing. So if this is an ideal guru, who is the real true guru? Aha, the plot thickens. God alone is the real guru, Swami says. Swami says, a guru is verily the creator, the sustainer, and the destroyer. These are the different facets of God, and hence, guru means God, verily. Again, Swami talks about the moon. Purnima is the day on which the spotlessly clean and unblemished moon sheds his cool and steady light on the world. Whatever is said or taught with a pure heart is God's own word. People celebrate Guru Purnima as a Guru Puja day, the day on which they offer worship to their guru, offer some money and presents in return for some mantra or sacred words taught to them by him. In fact, one's own heart is one's guru. Whatever comes from the depth of one's own heart is the real teaching of the guru. This was the Guru Purnima discourse in 2008. This is really, really interesting. Because what this tells us is we are, in fact, empowered by Swami to be our own gurus. If we can feel this presence in our own heart and we hear his voice, that in itself is our guide, is our teacher. So this reminds me of a story. One second. This reminds me of a story back in Portland, which is where I live now and where I lived a few years earlier. And we were doing a project where we were distributing shoes to the needy. I talked about another example yesterday during the project. This is another year. And I had located this organization that basically provided housing to homeless youth. So youth were thrown out of their homes for whatever reason. They would actually catch buses and hitch rides and do what it takes to get to this organization in Portland, because they would be provided housing and a chance to get their diploma, their high school diploma. So I came across this organization in the papers and I started talking to them. And they said, you know, a lot of our youth are homeless. And even though they have housing here, they come with absolutely, you know, they come with nothing. And we have to basically provide them everything, food, shelter, clothing. So while talking to them, we discussed the possibility of, you know, will shoes help them? If so, can we meet them? Can we find out what sizes they wear so that we can go and get shoes as Christmas gifts? So before going and talk to them, I prayed to Swami. Because, you know, when you start a new service project, the first thing, the absolute necessary thing to do is pray to Swami. Because you don't want that to happen halfway, where you've not prayed to him and he makes you pray to him halfway, because he reminds you that you didn't check in with me in the beginning. So check in now. When that situation happens, it's basically you painted yourself into a corner at that point. So lesson learned, right? So start praying in the beginning. The voice in my heart, Swami's voice said, do this. It's good. Let's do this. So we went on our merry way. We got the youth together. We collected shoes. We categorized them, put them in boxes, packed. We had a big day at the center after Bhajans one day where we gift-wrapped 60 pairs of shoes and put them in bags, and they were ready to be delivered. And all the time the heart is saying, this is good. This is good. Do it. I load the car up. I drive into the parkway of this organization, and the mind starts talking. And the mind says, really? Do you think this place needs shoes? I mean, they've got a 5-story building in the middle of Portland. This is a rich place. Are you sure they need your shoes? And you know, this is one of the big things. Swami says, question yourself constantly, but there are some places where you just don't need to do that. You could just follow what Swami is telling you and it's happy. But no, I had to get worked up about, are we doing the right thing? The fact that the thing was being done, that the service project had taken care of itself with Swami's grace, should have been an indication enough. But no, there was this nagging doubt. Well, I had the shoes in my car. I wasn't going to drive away with them, so I pushed the nagging doubt back. And I said, okay, let's go deliver them. I walk in, and this gentleman walks out. His name is Zachary Goldman. He's 6'2". And he says, I'm the new volunteer coordinator. I just started today. I said, okay. And then we start carting shoes up. We're talking about Portland. We're talking about the weather. We're talking about how these shoes will be helpful. And he says, you know, I have no idea where you come from. What organization is this? Who is giving us our shoes? So I say, at that moment, the heart starts talking again. And I say, there is something here. The fact that he asked about who we are, Swami wants a conversation about him. So I said, we are the Satya Sai organization. We are the Satya Sai Center of Portland and Beaverton, and the youth are doing this project. He says, oh, you're from India. And I said, yes, I am. And then he said, namaste. And that coming from Zach Goldman, who was 6'2", working in Portland. Everybody has a beard in Portland. So Zach Goldman had a beard as well. Portland is the beardiest town. No, this is serious. It's actually been called the beardiest town. But we digress. So Zach Goldman says, namaste. And then I say, wow, you know a little bit of greeting in my language. And he says, yes, I went to India. And I was there for 6 months doing social work. And see, I got this water bottle in India. So he's had this steel water bottle. And he says, see, Saraswati. So what it was a water bottle which had a print on it. You know, the rubber print that they put around the water bottle. So it's just an ink print of Saraswati on a water bottle. Then he turns the bottle around and he says, "See, Sai Baba." And my feet gave way under me. So, you know, Swami's message, listen to your heart. There was Swami's ink print there. His beautiful, lovely head of hair, his face, his smile, and even his mole. I mean, talk about detail. So it was all there waiting for me. And then at that moment I discovered, you know, the minute the mind starts talking, quash it. Because once Swami talks to you through your heart, he is telling you. He's telling you what you should do and how you should be doing it. So, in other words, the guru is in the depth of our hearts, sure enough. He's not really far away. He's guiding us always. It is a universal voice that speaks to each and every one of us in this room. Yet, we envision him far away. Why is that? It's because of this. The red arrow is where we are. And approximately the other end is Prashanti Nilayam. That's a long distance away. But this, you know, this is so worldly. The guru is not interested in the matters of the world. I read a quote yesterday where we said, you know, he'll give you food. He won't let you starve. He'll take care of you. Don't worry about the world. That's what the guru says, at least. He's in our hearts. He's in our hearts all the time. And so he can't be far away. He can't be far away. We're never far away from the guru. Never far away from the guru. Because we're never away from the avatarais, we're never away from the avatarais. He's only as far as the space from our hearts, he lives in our hearts, he lives in our hearts. Space from our hearts, he lives in our hearts, he lives in our hearts. We're never lost, he is always the light, always the light, Sai, always the light. Soothing our souls with his avatar eyes, Sai avatar eyes. Avatar eyes, avatar eyes, Sai avatar eyes. We're never away from the avatar eyes, avatar eyes, Sai. We're never away from the avatar eyes, because Swami is so much more than that little dot at the end of the arrow. Swami has said time and time again, and perhaps it's so much more relevant today than it ever was in the past, that he is more than his body. Swami has said, "I am not the body." He's not minced words. He's actually said it pretty directly. "I am not the body." There's no meaning, no other meaning to that. Swami says, if you want to see God, you should firmly believe that you're not the body. To identify yourself with the body is but an illusion. Students should try to understand this clearly. All that is seen outside is only a reflection and is not the reality. You see Sai Baba in front of you. You identify Sai Baba with the body. But I am not the body. I and you are one. Once you understand this truth clearly, there will be no difference whatsoever. Not only does Swami say he's not the body, Swami says we're not the body. And Swami says it's an illusion. The way he talks here is about how it's such an illusion. And actually later that year, Swami gave a Guru Purnima discourse. And a day before the Guru Purnima discourse, there was a swelling on his cheek. And Swami came on Guru Purnima day, and the swelling had gone. And Swami said during the discourse, I did not will this swelling to go away, because I don't care for my body. You, however, your devotion, you prayed, some of you cried, some of you fasted, I knew all that was going on. You were so disturbed that yesterday during the valedictory address, I assume some function would have ended and there was a valedictory address. During the valedictory address, you were looking at the swelling and not paying attention to what was going on. All that made the swelling go away on its own. I am not connected to this body. I am not this body. I'm not interested in it. There is no, actually, I think he says, I'm selfless and I don't have a connection with this body. Your devotion made that go away. So Swami actually was giving two messages that Guru Purnima Day. One is we are not the body. And two, devotion to our Guru and Lord can make swelling go away. In other words, can actually have beneficial results even in somebody such as Bhagawan, who is the divine incarnation who lived in the planet. So that's such an important message to keep in our hearts always. And this also, it's also such an important message because that's what makes Swami universal. If he is in us, and if he is in you, and if he is in, as we go further down, we're going to talk about nature. Swami exists in all of nature, everything around us. Then Swami is here. He is here now. There is no two ways about it. There is only that is the only interpretation. That is the only way we can take that sentence to mean I am not this body. There can be no other meaning to that sentence. If we identify Swami with the body, then you may have seen these pictures come out. Then this is exactly how we can hold Swami in our hearts. And it's very important to hold Swami in our hearts this particular way. Right? It's so beautiful. It's such a strong aura, divine aura that comes from just looking at this picture. But if we also take Swami's words to heart, especially the words that say, you and I are one, then this is as important a statement to take into our hearts as well. And that is, his life is now our message. His life is now our message. So, you know, Swami says, you can declare that your life is Swami's message only when you take to the path of truth and righteousness, install peace and love in your heart, and uphold nonviolence. Swami says love is his form, truth is his breath, and bliss is his food. And, you know, whenever we take those five values, those five universal values that can be applied anywhere, in any situation, in our walks of life, and integrated with our lives, that's when we can declare that Swami's life is our message. So, in other words, you know, there are exemplary people, and Swami has talked about a few of them. There are, you know, this is not completely a black hole. Swami has lived an example. And there are other people who exist both in history that Swami has talked about, and those who Swami has not talked about, but yet seem to be espousing his message, right? And so inspiration is really all around us. Wherever we are, there's opportunity to be inspired, to hold Swami's message foremost in our hearts. For example, one of the teachers that Swami talks about a lot is Adi Shankara. So Adi Shankara was a big proponent of non-dualism. We've talked a lot about non-dualism today. And Swami actually has mentioned him in several discourses. He said he lived between 788 and 820 CE, and he basically lived for 32 years, and he contributed so much to the area of non-dualism in that short time that Swami mentions him time and time again. Swami says, this is Swami's quotes about Shankara, this was the non-dualism preached by Shankara. Consider the divine as the fundamental basis and lead your worldly life recognizing its impermanence. Without the divine, the cosmos has no existence. Hence man must recognize the one divine atmic principle that is present in all beings. It may be called by different names. The eternal divine is birthless and nameless. So, you know, Swami gives examples of Shankara, and then there are other examples in history where the words that they mention are so in tune with what Swami says, you immediately think, were they Swami devotees? Perhaps they were, they just didn't know it, right? So one example I came across was Aunt Sullivan Macy. So she was visually impaired, and she herself went through a lot of struggles. She lost her parents, she lost her brother, she put herself through school, and she is most famous for being Helen Keller's teacher. Now, Helen Keller was a deaf-blind girl, and Anne Sullivan Macy basically worked with her to give her the sense of a vocabulary and words and communication by pointing to things around her in the environment, and then giving her from the sense of the remaining senses that she had, touch and smell and feeling, she would describe what things they were. So she would actually have Helen touch things, and then she would blow on her hands and create a language, a vocabulary with her. It is amazing. Swami talks about patience, forbearance, and it's a wonderful example of this personality. But the interesting thing is, when she graduated from school, she gave a valedictorian address. And she says, God has placed us here to grow, to expand, to progress, etc. What's really interesting is the last line. If a love for truth and beauty and goodness is not cultivated, the mind loses the strength which comes from the truth, the refinement which comes from beauty, and the happiness which comes from goodness. An exemplary teacher to be remembered on Guru Purnima for certain. She is using the words truth, beauty, and goodness. Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram. Such a great resonance. And when I read that, the first time I read that, it didn't sink in. It didn't even strike me. And then the second time, and I was very inspired by her. The second time I read that, I saw the words pop out, and I said, oh my gosh, I should talk about her. Because this is actually a letter that she wrote. She lived in a time, of course, 1866 to 1904, where we actually have recorded history of her letters and her communications and her addresses. So I thought that was another very inspiring piece. Swami also talks a lot about this next person. He comes further down. But Swami basically says, respect your teachers as God. So this is especially to the students. In the old days, when the students were returning to their homes after completing their education, the sages used to tell them various good things like respect your mother as God, respect your father as God, respect your teacher as God, tell the truth, follow the path of Dharma. They were protecting these statements as if they were precious gems given to them. Throughout their lives, until the end of their lives, these statements remained as their weapons and they were safeguarding them. So Swami basically is telling us, you know, we have teachers around us in all shapes and forms, mother, father, God, and our teachers themselves. And basically Swami also tells us in this context that this teaching can come from wherever. And one of the very important teachers that Swami mentions, and this is important especially in the context of the play that we took to India, to present in Prashanti Nilayam in front of Swami's divine, to offer to Swami in front of his divine form. That was about nature. Swami actually says, nature is the teacher absolute. Who takes the role of educator from the beginning of your life? The mother, is it not? Nature is the mother, the feminine principle, the illusory energy. She is the great teacher. If you do not learn the lessons well, nature punishes you, boxes you in the ear, hits you on the head. She is a stern, merciless instructress. But if you learn well, she will lead you proudly to the presence of the Supreme Person. Obey nature and be well trained by her. Then you can inherit the glory of the Supreme Person. This is especially very inspiring in the context of what happened in the last year, because this is the fundamental of what we wanted to take to present to Swami. Now, the Pacific Northwest, how many of you have been to Portland and Seattle? So one thing the Pacific Northwest kind of revels in is its natural abundance, its natural beauty. You can drive out 20 minutes from 10 minutes from a metropolitan area, and you have Mother Nature in abundance. And it's spellbinding. It's fantastic. So when we were thinking about, this was actually, it was meant to be a Region 6 effort. We were thinking we should take a pilgrimage to Parthi. We have a lot of software engineers in our area, and so they were all about P2P, pilgrimage to Parthi. So we were taking a pilgrimage to Parthi, and we had started thinking about it, and we were thinking about, we had received a message that Swami had addressed a group from the United States and had told them he wants to see things that are native, that are things that are, bring me things from your land, is what he had told them. So we were thinking about, you know, we live in so much nature. Swami has sent this message. Swami's message is universal. How do we connect up all these things? At that point, we actually were thinking that we should take something to do with Native American culture. So we said, you know, they revere nature. They actually are able to see the Great Spirit in nature, all around them. They worship and they respect nature so much that we should be able to derive some inspiration from them, from that, to take to Swami. And of course, Swami here is talking about nature being the greatest teacher. Swami also says that, yes, this is visual respite for all of you. So you don't have to keep looking at me and you can see Swami instead in the abundance of nature. I especially like where he's standing in between all the flowers there, the roses, because Portland is the rose city. We have a fantastic rose garden. You should consider visiting sometime. It's gorgeous. So, end shameless plug. So in the abundance of nature that Swami talks of as being the eternal teacher, Swami says, you can win the Guru's grace. Swami says, when you're given some work, you should put your heart and soul into it and do the work with the utmost sincerity and dedication to the limit of your capacity. Now, why does this all tie in together? Swami actually says that when you apply yourself, when you put your utmost sincerity and follow the work given to you by your teacher, by your guru, he gives the example of, if you want to develop a garden and you plant trees, and you water the trees, and the trees grow well, and you diligently do what you need to do in the garden, and then one day Swami comes out and walks among the trees, he sees all the trees, he sees your work in those trees, and he is happy. And Swami's happy converts into grace. Swami actually says that, my happiness becomes grace. And in that context, when you're given some work, you should put your heart and soul into it and do the work with the utmost sincerity and dedication. There was, you know, a committee was formed to do this cultural presentation in front of Swami. And they asked if I could lead the effort at directing this play. And, you know, I know Swami's message about a duty that's given to you. And at that point, the point that I was a little stumped by is, I don't know anything about Native American traditions, their music, their, you know, what is it they hold dear to themselves, to their hearts? I had no idea. And so it seemed like a catch-22. But you also know that Swami never puts you in situations that you cannot handle. If he's put you in a situation and you think you can't handle it, perish that thought. You can handle it. You're fine. He would have never put you there if you can't handle it. So all we have to do is change our mind around and say we can handle it. So, of course, it was a divine opportunity. And I said, well, Swami, if you help lead and guide me, sure, I can do this. But Swami had, you know, the orchestration of the divine is something that the biggest chief operations officers of the biggest companies in the world cannot even imagine. They cannot imitate with any degree of success. The operations of the divine are just spotless and spot on, really. So we think about this Native American play, and the regional officers are visiting various centers talking about a pilgrimage to Parthi, and they go to Grant's Pass and they talk about it there. And one of the people says, oh, do you know about George Walking Bear? And they didn't know who George Walking Bear was. George Walking Bear is an elder from the Tulalip tribe in Northern California. And he has written books. He has written five different books about his experiences in Native American spirituality. And in the second book, he talks about Swami as the Purna Avatar. He says Swami is the Great Spirit. And he says it with a lot of conviction. And he's over 82 years now. He's old. And his assistant, a young person who helps him by the name of Ruben, actually lives in Grants Pass. And Ruben came to this meeting. And Ruben started talking about all the things that are sacred to Native American spirituality and its connection with nature. So all these magical things were happening. We've been in that region for 10 years. Yet Swami's timing is Swami's timing, right? We are on a clock where if I find a spot between two cars on the freeway, I want to claim it as mine. So, you know, weaving. Because that amount of time that it takes to close that gap is important to me. But Swami's time is eternal. He's beyond time. He's kalatitaya, right? Time is of no consequence to him. So he was just planning this beautifully in his own time frame and his scheduling. And so when that happened, that was a message. We said, yes, Swami is telling us we need to do this. Let's take it forward. Let's take it forward. There are some times when surrender is an option. The fact that I was made the director of a Native American play meant it was not an option. It was necessary because I had no idea. I didn't know where to start. I didn't know what to do. And so surrender was a component of our lives, the four of us especially, who started working on the play. So there were two people in Seattle who were part of the committee. There was me, and then there was a gentleman in Eugene, Oregon, and the four of us worked on it together. And, you know, we were discovering things on a daily basis, and surrender was an important part of this discovery. Why? Because, I've lost track of my slides now. I'm in my own world, which is good. Because, we'll get to this slide in a second. Because the surrender is such an important part of that journey, because every day our plan was changing. And changing for the better. Swami, in the first quotation that I read, we talked about the title of that discourse where he talks about the qualities of a guru, free from acquisition, selflessness. The title of that is Develop Broad-Mindedness to Earn the Grace of the Guru. So Swami says, broaden your horizons. You know, broaden your horizons. So here we started off being a small play that Region 6 was taking to India. And then slowly it became the national, the national project, because the nation wanted to go on a pilgrimage. They did want to present a play in Prashanthi Nilayam. And the timing for creating a completely new play was not right. And we had already started working on this play. So at the national level, they said, okay, let's take this play. And so, broadening. And the next aspect was, oh, but there'll be kids from other regions. And kids would love to participate. Of course they would love to participate. And when, especially when they see other children participate, they are enthused to participate. So then broaden some more. How do we incorporate everybody? What is the best way to do this? And then our prayer actually outgrew the cast that Region 6 could provide. So the play itself, so besides involving other children, the play itself started involving, the kids were acting in the play. But how do we rehearse for a play on two ends of the country or four ends of the country? Broaden, 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 broaden. Every step, Swami was with us. Swami was guiding us. When you develop broad-mindedness and when you want to work in unity, definitely, Swami responds in just magical ways. You take a step towards him, he takes 100 steps towards you. So the reason why a small play that was an idea based on Swami's direction of what he wanted to see became an offering where children from all 10 regions of the country could participate is because of Swami's direction and his direction to us to be unified, to bring it to him as one nation. And that is the amazing part. So, in that context, when we went to Prashanthi Nilayam, we were told if somebody asked us where we were from, we were not to say Portland, Oregon, or Seattle, Washington, or Texas. We were supposed to say, you are from the United States of America. Remember, you're wearing a USA flag, USA scarf, and say you are from the USA. It makes complete sense. Let's be united. Let's be united. So the guru has very often to tell you that you have forgotten your real name or that you have lost the most precious part of yourself, and yet you are unaware of the loss. The guru is the physician for the illness which brings about the suffering of alternate birth and death. He's adept at the treatment needed for the cure. We have forgotten our real name and we identify with Sunil Kasturi, Portland, Oregon. And it was very interesting that the first step, when we went into the pilgrimage, we were asked to broaden, say, you know, at least start there. Don't, you know, forget where you come from. Broaden, broaden. And so in this picture, Swami is actually walking into the hall, and the kids are all in their costumes. You can see two deer heads there, and the volunteers are sitting behind them. And Swami, this is our backdrop. This is our wonderful backdrop with the two totem poles on the two sides, the mountains, the river. And those who have been to the Pacific Northwest can vouch that we actually look exactly like that picture. We do. We don't have the teepee. But yes, we look exactly like that picture. It's gorgeous. So anyway, so Swami's coming in and he talks to the children and he asks them, where are you from? And you know, this is the most magical part of this journey was the fact that the children were completely in a world that they had never encountered before. Their parents, their elders, Uncle Sunil was telling them about Swami, telling them about, this is what we do in Prashanthi Nilayam. Don't think you can run around willy-nilly. There's discipline, you know. So they're taking all this in, and Uncle Sunil is telling this, their aunts and uncles are telling this, their parents are telling this. They're understanding Prashanthi Nilayam. They're understanding Swami's physical presence. But this opportunity for them is life-changing because now they have experiences to talk about. They can come up to a podium 20 years from now and say, when I was in the presence of the divine, this is what I felt. And Swami made that happen for them. Once the kids were in the same hall as Swami, the adults had to just gracefully blend into the background and let the mother and the children have their conversation. So the children said, if you stand between me and Swami when you direct, I will have words to tell you. They actually came and told this. And I told them, you know what? I will stand out of the way. If you promise to look at me when the singing is going on, when the direction is going on, and when the play is going on, you can all look at Swami. I don't care if you see the other kids in the play. You can see Swami. But when you're singing, it's your duty. You should be looking at me. So we had this kind of disagreement. And we had to establish this agreement because you know what happens. A million hearts with tears in our eyes, walking for Swami, waiting for Swami to come in, we just get lost. We had to have these ground rules. Otherwise, we would have all just been standing there looking at Swami, and then, you know, Swami knows what would have happened next. So Swami came in and asked the kids about where they were. And a lot of them remembered to say United States of America. And the children actually are so blessed by this journey, mainly because after they started doing this play, every time we met them, we would tell them, this is an offering to Swami. And the rehearsal itself is in Swami's presence. So if we go to India and we don't get to do this play in front of Swami, it doesn't matter because we're doing it in front of Swami every day. That's what we would tell them. Nothing guarantees the fact that we will be able to present in front of Swami's physical form. It is Swami's will. But know that He is here today and we can do our best today. So we would start our rehearsals with, may our efforts please you, Swami. That was the constant mantra. And that was the biggest experience to take away from this. May our efforts please you, Swami. So Swami came in. He talked to all the children. He asked them where they were. The children remembered a step away from their, you know, step away from their worldly themselves to the real me. They at least identified as USA. And then Swami said, who are you and who are you? And actually, we had asked about the colors of the tribe that we had picked a lot of the songs from. So they had it on their faces. So Swami actually went up to Bernice Mead and said, what is all this? So Bernice talked to Swami about, Swami, we're all Native Americans here today. And so Swami was very pleased with that answer. So it was like, you know, as if he didn't know, he went up and said, what is this? And that exchange was so beautiful. And so, you know, Swami is still coming in. This is when he's actually talking to the children and asking them where they're from and such. Swami is always very clear in the way he focuses on certain things about what is important to him and what he expects you to cultivate. So one example is this. I think it's the next picture. Yes. So we had a card we gave to Swami, a large card. And the card in itself was an effort that spanned four regions of this country. So we were sending PDFs back and forth. The actual physical card was being made in one place, and it was beautiful. It had Native American dream catchers in them and made out of jute. Fantastic. Beautiful card. So before this, the two ladies I talked about in the play offered the CD to Swami, the final recording. So yesterday I talked about how we were in the recording studio and we told, and we walked in and there was a Swami picture hanging there. And Swami was, through the several tens and hundreds of hours we spent in that studio recording individual musicians and mixing it all together and fixing pitches on the Om. We talked about that yesterday. So Om was actually a challenge, but we had to do it, record it four times to make sure that Om was just perfect. And at one point, the sound engineer said, you need to do this properly. It's the first thing Swami will hear, and this is not right. It needs to be better. So the sound engineer was totally on Swami's side, which we loved. He could keep us in check. So this sound engineer said, so the first cut of the CD, I'm guessing you're not going to use that in the play. You're going to give it to Sai Baba, aren't you? So, and we said, he was so into the presentation. He was a little wistful that he couldn't come to India with us. And so the first cut of the CD, Swami accepted. The ladies gave it to him. Swami accepted. And then we showed Swami the card. The first thing that Swami read on that card, and this again, you know, we talk about unity, how we see God in everybody, how Swami's equal-mindedness is one of the aspects of the Guru that came up in that first quotation. The only thing Swami read out loud in that card was, with love and surrender, your children of the United States of America. So Swami read, your children of the United States of America out loud. That's the only thing he read, and he smiled. That's the only thing that mattered to him on that card. That is so instructive. That was so instructive that, you know, we put so much thought into everything that went on the card. But the unity, the fact that we represented ourselves as his children living in this country, was the thing that stood out for him. And then we gave him this. And actually, each of those sections on that card are parts of the play. And here again, he picked two important concepts that we were presenting. One was the Red Road, which is the Native American teaching around the ideal way to live in harmony with the environment. So he read that out loud. Ah, the Red Road. And then the other thing that he read was the Medicine Wheel. That was another important part of the play where we were talking about what each of the directions signify. Each of them have an animal associated with it. Each of these animals give you a lesson about how you can be spiritually in tune with nature all the time. Because as Swami says, she is the best teacher. And Swami read the Medicine Wheel out. So, you know, Swami tells us that, you know, don't talk if you can't improve on the silence. Some of us insist on talking anyway. But when Swami says, don't talk if you can't improve on the silence, every word that Swami actually speaks is so significant because he uses it very, very efficiently. His words are pearls. His words are such a beautiful resource to us. Every word that he utters, then we are able to hear. And so after this, the play started. And I don't know that picture is here. Thought I'll add this in. So I was reading the introduction to the play, and then I realized I was the only thing happening in that scene. There was nothing else going on, right? So there was an empty stage, and there was me, and I didn't think this through. You know, you're in the presence of the divine. You're a little befuddled, to say the least. So I'm sitting there going, I didn't have a stand to put my paper on, so I just had my paper in my hand. And Swami was looking because there's nothing else going on there. It's the beginning of the play, and this is the only thing that's being read. So I felt like I should do this, but I had the paper. I wanted to do this. I had the paper. So I ended up doing this. The kids came up to me after the play, and they said, why did you do that as if you were reading the Pledge of Allegiance? So then I had to explain to them, no, this is what was going on. And end with, you weren't there. You can't talk like that to me. So it was. I thought this was funny. So that was me reading my Pledge of Allegiance to Swami. So Swami talks about the unity that we talked about. Swami says, unity of entire mankind is the need of the hour. When you develop, there will be purity in your heart. Where there is purity, there is divinity. Unity, purity, divinity are closely interlinked and interdependent. Swami goes on to say at the end of this, recognizing the unity of the atmic principle is true spirituality. When you realize this unity, you will earn divine grace. This is the universality of Swami. The fact that we can actually be united in the message he provides us and united in the way we think about him. So I have just a couple more things to share here. This is actually the Native American who was at Grants Pass, and he's actually doing the eagle chant in front of Swami. And this is a beautiful picture because Swami's head is turned to look at him. He is just immersed in doing the eagle chant in front of the Lord. He did that at the beginning of our play. That marked the beginning of the play. And then, this is the moment that all the children were waiting for, and we had a lot of conversations around it. We said, children, there will be a point when you will want to be unruly. Make sure that you quash that unruliness and behave in a very unified fashion at this point. Because this was, I'll come back to this, this was that point. This was that beautiful point. So the children, so you see children in the costumes. This is 160 children, by the way. The children in the costumes are the children in the play. And the children in the white clothes are the children who were in the choir. So they supported. So there was acting, and between scenes there was singing, acting and singing. We kind of weaved it all together. And the children in the play had a formation in the end where they would come and stand in a particular way. But the children in the choir needed to join in on the picture. So we were telling them very carefully, Swami will be there. You will want to go close to him. We understand that. But you have to... Swami expects that discipline. So this was a very important conversation to have with them, because like me, they, a lot of them, had not been in such a production. They had not been in such an offering. And so how does, you know, how does one behave in the divine presence? There is such a, you know, there is such a discipline, and there's such a way you present yourself. There's a line you do that you behave in the divine presence that all of us were learning together. So we, children and I, and many of the elders would have the conversation with the children. Other people who had taken place to present in front of Swami also came and gave their experiences and asked the children, and then they did a fantastic, fantastic job. So this was the picture. And nowadays, of course, in the last year or so, Swami, as soon as the picture is taken, it goes to get developed. And then it comes back, and Swami shows the picture up to the kid, to everybody. So in our case, he showed the picture up, then he called the turtle, who was one of the animals, a boy about yay high from New Jersey. And he told the turtle to share the picture with everybody, show the picture to everybody. So the turtle was, you know, he was like all of us, we were all just like, oh, Swami. And then he got called up, so he didn't know what to do. He looked at one of us, and we were saying, go. And then he went. And then Swami gave him the picture and said, share it with other people. Mr. Turtle picks it up, goes back and sits down with the picture. It is his divine prasadam from Swami. So Swami looks at him and he says, no, you were supposed to show it around. So then he's still confused. And then we're like, get up and show it around. So the picture passes around at that point. And everybody sees that. Before then, another important lesson, and I will take just two more minutes. Another important lesson. This was Medicine Eagle. This was an 11-year-old boy playing the role of Medicine Eagle, who is the woman who's talking about the importance of the medicine wheel and talking about all the spiritual teachings that come with it. There was something here that just occurred to me this morning, and I don't know why it didn't occur to me earlier. And it's such a beautiful message. So when he was doing one part where he basically holds the stage between various parts, and people come and go, animals come and go that belong to different corners of the medicine wheel. So at one point where he was holding the stage and the deer were ready to come in, Swami asked to be taken away. He called somebody and he said, take me away. And so Swami left. This boy is in the middle of a step doing, you know, his biggest acting, and he's just like, I'm presenting to the Lord of the universe. He's in this moment and Swami's being wheeled away. The boy freezes for a second. He's like, what do I do now? Who am I presenting to? So we're all sitting there on the sides. And Brother Harish Naidu is actually sitting right next to Swami. And he looks at him, Harish, and myself. And we're just gesturing frantically to go on. No. Keep doing what you're doing. So he does. He just, you know, he's like, okay. He gets back his, you know, that sense of, oh, Swami's gone. He gets it back again, holds it together, and you know, just presents. Swami came back in a minute and a half. There were a lot of theories about why Swami left for a minute and a half. But, you know, that aside, when Swami came back, everything was just great. He was there for the finale of the play afterwards. He went for a minute and a half, and he came back. But that is so indicative of the time we're living in. Swami may be away physically from the stage, but our show must go on. Our show must go on. The message that he's provided to us, the things that he has given us to hold as near and dear, the five values, the points of conduct, the code of conduct, the guiding principles, there are so many things, so many tools that Swami has provided us. That show must go on. And that was the message I had this morning. And this is the look on his face immediately after Swami came back. So there's the sense of, oh, there you are. And so that was so strong. So to finish up, Swami actually said in 1963 at a Guru Purnima discourse, nothing can impede or halt the work of the avatar. When I was upstairs all these days, some people were foolishly saying, it is all over with Sai Baba. And they turned back many who were coming to Puttaparthi. Some said I was in samadhi, as if I were a spiritual aspirant. Some feared I was the victim of black magic, as if that can affect me, as if anything can affect me. The splendor of this avatar will go on increasing day by day. Formerly, when the Govardhanagiri, a mountain, was raised aloft by the little boy Krishna, the cowherd maids and boys, gopis and gopalas, realized that Krishna was the Lord. Now, not one Govardhanagiri, but a whole range will be lifted. You will see. Have patience. Have faith. Tomorrow morning, I shall give every one of you the blessing that you missed today. That is Swami's words of encouragement to us. This is also the discourse where he talks about him being the aspect of Shiva and Shakti. It's called the Shiva Shakti discourse. And Swami comes out of an 8-day paralysis, cures himself, and then gives this discourse. This, I think, encapsulates what Swami wishes for us to do and to hear as our divine teacher, how he exists in and around us and how we should keep going, how the show must go on, because his work can never be impeded or halted. So with the Shiva Shakti discourse, I would like to say thank you and Sai Ram. Hari Om Namo Shiva Shakti Namo.
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 Sadguru Shri Satya Sai Namo.
Sadguru Shri Satya Sai Namo.
Sadguru Shri Satya Sai Namo.
Hari Om Namo Sita Ram 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 Namo.
Sadguru Shri Satya Sai Namo.
Sadguru Shri Satya Sai Namo.
Hari Om. Hari Om Namo
Sita Ram Namo.
Hari Om Namo Sita Ram Namo.
Sadguru Shri Satya Sai Namo.
Sadguru Shri Satya Sai Namo.
Hari Om. Sadguru Shri Satya Sai Namo.
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 Hari Om Namo Shiva Shakti Namo. Sai Ram, everybody, I would like to thank all of you in the Chicago area for inviting me. It was such a pleasure to reminisce about Swami, reminisce about the play, think about all the little things that went into our offering to Swami. And it is always such a privilege to think about him, read his works, say his name, and share a minuscule amount of his teachings. So I thank you for providing me that opportunity. Sai Ram.